It's estimated that there are roughly 1.3 million kids under the age of 21 and homeless on the streets of America. Up to 40% of those identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender.
Nobody really seems to care about these kids. They don't know what to do, they don't know how to help, and the things that they've tried before just don't seem to work and sometimes make it worse.
When I see a guy pushing a shopping cart, I go, oh, homeless guy. If I see a bunch of kids hanging out on the corner, it never occurs to me.
The gay community itself is very uneducated on this topic.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Assassinated Pim's party places in Dutch national elections, Brazil's president salutes civil unions with a rainbow flag, and shepherding queer kids who've been chased out in the cold. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 18th, 2002. In the wake of last week's assassination of Pim Fortuyn, the Netherlands' openly gay political hopeful, his Pim Fortuyn's List party, LPF, appeared to have won 17% of the seats in Parliament in unofficial results from this week's national elections. That's pretty much what polls had indicated before Fortuyn was shot to death, despite pundits' predictions of a sympathy vote for the new party. The LPF's emergence as the number two party in its first national election was just one symptom of clear voter dissatisfaction with the present coalition government and of what many view as a broader European swing to the right. Premier Wim Kok's Labour Party suffered its worst defeat in decades, and its coalition partners, the VVD and D66, also lost many votes to smaller parties. Emerging as number one with 29% of the parliamentary seats was the Conservative Christian Democratic Party, CDA, after 8 years out of power. The CDA is expected to form a ruling coalition with VVD and LPF, which is now led by Mot Herben after some internal struggles. CDA leader Jan-Peter Balkenend had previously voiced his taste for the full equal marriage rights the Netherlands extended to gays and lesbians last year, but his spokesperson said he now views it as an irreversible fact.
Brazil's President Fernando Henrique Cardoso strongly endorsed legal recognition of same-gender couples for the first time this week. He even waved a rainbow flag for the media after announcing his Programa Nacional dos Direitos Humanos, a massive policy statement with more than 500 provisions towards protecting the human rights of gays and lesbians and transgenders, women, people with disabilities, the elderly, Black and Native peoples, and the poor. Although Cardoso had introduced a similar human rights reform plan 6 years ago, the new edition was the first to include gays and lesbians. In fact, in the face of heavy opposition from the Roman Catholic Church, the Grupo Gay de Bahia believes it's Brazil's first official document ever to address their issues. Cardoso will be leaving office in January after national elections in October, but he said the measures announced today are policies of a nation elaborated after consultation with sectors of society. They are not just acts of this administration and should be maintained by future governments. That's a real possibility, as current polls show Cardoso's likely successor will be the candidate of the Workers' Party, which has long strongly advocated for equal treatment of gays and lesbians and legal standing for their relationships.
Britain's government has taken two significant steps in recognizing same-gender couples. Prison Services Director General Martin Nary made public new guidelines under which the partners of gay prisoners in England and Wales will be recognized as family members for visitation purposes. That extends even to those partners who are also incarcerated, with arrangements for visitation, even if they're housed at a different prison. He cited the importance of stable relationships in preventing recidivism. And following the Blair government's clear signal of support last week, the House of Commons this week approved opening adoptions to unmarried couples, including gay and lesbian couples. The Labour Party, which holds a huge majority in the Commons, let its members vote their conscience on the amendment to the Adoption and Children Bill, but passage still came by a more than 2-to-1 margin. It will be a very different story, though, as the measure moves on to the House of Lords, where the religious right and the Conservative Party have vowed to block it.
The Conservative Party that rules the Canadian province of Alberta last week presented its own plan for legal recognition of same-gender couples. That's something that would have been inconceivable just a few years ago, as the Klein government has long fought tooth and nail against equal treatment for gays and lesbians. Alberta is the last of the Canadian provinces to unveil law reform for same-gender partners, and the proposal has been made as general as possible, including other cohabiting pairs sharing economic responsibilities, such as adult relatives who live together. The proposal includes provisions for alimony, inheritance, standing to sue for wrongful death of a partner, and sharing a surname. Leaving plenty of time for public comment, an actual bill for omnibus law reform won't be introduced until the next legislative session.
The Philadelphia, Pennsylvania City Council this week voted 15-2 to add gender identity as a category protected from discrimination in housing, employment, and public accommodations. Mayor John Street, despite an anti-gay track record during his years on the city council, has indicated that he will sign the amendment to the city's Fair Protections Ordinance.
Sweden's parliament this week voted to add sexual orientation as the sixth category protected under the hate speech provisions of the national constitution. Violations can be punished by up to 2 years' imprisonment. The government's bill won 70% of the vote, but as a constitutional amendment, it will require a second parliamentary vote after September elections. Opponents fear the measure could interfere with the free speech rights of anti-gay religious groups.
Asking for a homosexual encounter should be a little easier in the U.S. Midwest thanks to two advances this week. The Ohio State Supreme Court struck down that state's importuning law, which applies only to expressions of interest between people of the same gender and has most often been used in police undercover operations in cruising areas. The case before the court was an appeal by Eric Thompson. He'd been sentenced to 6 months in jail for simply offering sex to a man in a park, even though he stopped when the man expressed disinterest. Also this week, the Detroit, Michigan City Council approved the terms of a proposed legal settlement, including revision of city ordinances against solicitation and accosting and annoying persons. Those ordinances had been used by undercover police officers to arrest some 500 men in a four-month period in the city's Rouge Park, leading the American Civil Liberties Union to file a federal lawsuit against the city's police department on behalf of six men. City Councilmember Sheila Cockrell is more than ready to repeal the vaguely worded annoying persons ordinance, saying that using the context of the ordinance as it is now, who hasn't been annoying?
A bill to specifically criminalize sex between women was introduced this week in the Russian Duma. Last month, the People's Deputy Party introduced a bill to resurrect Russia's law against sex between men, which had been repealed 9 years ago after the breakup of the Soviet Union. The Nationalist Liberal Democratic Party, LDPR, cited gender parity in its call to make lesbians as well as gays subject to up to 5 years' imprisonment, but its leader, Andrei Mitrofanov, also declared that since it is women who are the most important participants in the demographic process from the state's viewpoint, they should be held in very tough gloves. Neither bill is expected to pass.
Men convicted under the anti-gay laws of the Nazi regime were finally pardoned this week by a vote of the lower house of the German parliament. The Nazis targeted Germany's burgeoning gay movement soon after taking power, and a man could be arrested just for looking at another male. Some 50,000 gays are believed to have been convicted under those laws, many of them dying in concentration camps where they were treated even more harshly than others. Unlike others convicted under Nazi rule, German gays remain criminals even after liberation, with the sodomy laws remaining on the books in West Germany until 1969 and in East Germany until unification. Openly gay member of parliament Volker Beck said, "Finally, the homosexuals who were persecuted will receive justice." Gay and lesbian groups in Austria this month held a 12-day series of educational events honoring the memory of gay victims of the Holocaust. They called for compensation for them, something only 14 of the 50,000 have yet to receive.
Also in Germany this week, Berlin's openly gay mayor Klaus Wowereit ceremonially declared the late bisexual film icon Marlene Dietrich an honorary citizen of the city. Dietrich had once been vilified there as a traitor for her vocal opposition to the Nazis and her support of the U.S. war effort against them. Although she became a U.S. citizen in 1939 and spent most of her life there, she always considered Berlin her hometown and was buried there in 1992 as she had wished. Agence France-Presse suggests that her kissing another woman in the film Morocco was perhaps the first major lesbian gesture in commercial film.
And finally, Rosie O'Donnell tops the list of most powerful gay women in show business, released this week by Power, the professional organization of women in entertainment. O'Donnell received her sixth Daytime Emmy Award this week for the final year of her TV talk show and also confirmed rumors that her partner, Kelly Carpenter, is pregnant. The leader on Power's list last year, Ellen DeGeneres, came in second this year. She said, "Does this mean I'm runner-up? If so, I'm prepared to step in and take care of any most powerful lesbian in show business duties should photos surface of Rosie in compromising positions with a man."
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 18th, 2002. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
A little film tackling a big problem is slowly making its way across North America in theaters, schools, and community centers. More often than not, the three people behind the film travel with it to answer questions from the audience. In this very special report, This Way Out's Steve Pride asks a few of his own.
Mama will never understand why you had to leave. But the answers you seek will never be found at home. The love that you need will never be found at home. Run away, turn away.
Very few milestones are as profound for a gay teen as coming out to his or her parents, family, and friends. But sometimes kids find themselves rejected by the very institutions they were raised to believe in. There's a riveting new documentary that takes us on a journey into the lives of gay, homeless young people. It's called Out in the Cold.
My name is Eric Criswell. I am the co-director, co-producer of Out in the Cold.
I am Martin Bedonier, co-producer and director of Out in the Cold.
I am Judy Shepherd, the executive director of the Matthew Shepherd Foundation and the mother of Matthew Shepherd.
Homeless, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender kids living on the street. First, let's get some of the numbers and statistics so that we put this in some sort of perspective.
It's estimated that there are roughly 1.3 million kids who are under the age of 21 and homeless on the streets of America. Up to 40% of those identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered.
There was a term used in the film, throwaways. Could you explain that?
Throwaway is a term that's used a lot for kids who basically aren't wanted anymore. Thrown away by churches, thrown away by schools, thrown away by parents and family.
A question for each of you. What was your biggest surprise in doing this project?
The actual number of kids on the street and the hugeness of what they're dealing with.
Well, I think the biggest surprise for me is that nobody really seems to care about these kids. They don't know what to do, they don't know how to help, and the things that they've tried before just don't seem to work and sometimes make it worse.
How you as a parent could actually make that decision that it's better for them to be gone wherever they end up being than to be in my home, trying to understand the thought process is very difficult.
We have made a lot of progress in visibility through the media, and kids are more sexually aware today. Does that mean they're coming out to themselves at an earlier age? And what's the impact of that on themselves and the families?
I think that this is one of the reasons why this phenomenon is happening now. With all the information that's out there about sexuality and the fact that they are not alone, is encouraging people to come out to themselves younger and come out to the world younger. And they're telling their parents, and the parents can't cope, don't want to know, and the kids are thrown out before they are adults and able to support themselves. Years ago, when it would run through a young person's mind that they were different, perhaps they didn't know why they were different, or they thought they were the only ones in the world and were so afraid and didn't come out to their parents until they were well beyond depending on their parents. And now that's not the case. It's just happening so much sooner.
I was really surprised by Stanford University statistic quoted about runaways and prostitution.
Within 48 hours of leaving home, 42% of the kids on the street turned to prostitution. It truly is a matter of survival out there, and prostitution seems to be the quickest, easiest way to make money. Sad to say, there are people out there that are buying those services as well.
I just want to add something to that. One of the things we discovered and that people often don't think about is when you're under 15, you can't work in this country. So what else do you do? You have to break the law every day to survive. You have very, very few options. For kids, prostitution is a way of surviving, having a place to sleep, and possibly in their mind, it's the least harmful thing that I can do. I'm not stealing. I'm not hurting anyone. And the result is that they're hurting themselves.
A question for Eric. In the film, you talked to a mother that was rather supportive, but were you able to talk to parents that were not supportive? I mean, what could be the rationale? What do they think their children are going to do if they leave home at that age?
None that would actually go on camera. And understandably, these are their personal lives, and no one wants their personal lives out there. We talked with one parent who, when she did first find out that her son was gay, didn't ask him to leave, but what she did is asked him to buy his own dishes. Every time after he took a shower or a bath, made him clean out the bathtub with bleach, made life just miserable for him. Later, she came around as she got more understanding about truly what it is to be gay. It was her knee-jerk reaction, pretty much because she was ignorant and was horrified because of her background and, you know, what she had learned her whole life, that this was just some horrible thing that was happening to her family, and she was literally scared.
Do you think, though, that she understood that her child was at risk of being raped, killed?
No. I don't think that thought process is part of it. I don't think that they think that far ahead. I think a lot of it is knee-jerk reaction. It's, oh my God, how can this be happening? It's not quote-unquote right. They don't know what to do. And sad to say, a lot do overreact, and they do kick their kids out. Their motivation is, if we cut them off, then they'll realize how foolish this whole gay thing is, and hopefully it will straighten them out. They don't know what's out there. They don't know what they are sending their kids to. And a lot don't find out until it's too late.
Martin, how do you get the film to people that need to see it?
Well, that's always the million-dollar question. And then the question is always, are you preaching to the choir? And actually, Judy had a very good quote.
Dennis asked me when I was doing my programs if I ever felt like I was only speaking to the choir, that the people who needed to hear me really didn't come. They avoided it altogether. And he said, well, you know, it's okay if the choir comes because even the choir needs to rehearse, which makes perfect sense. You just need to be reminded and be worked up again about the issues and re-educated and re-energized.
The gay community itself is very uneducated on this topic. I know from my own experience prior to this, I really didn't have a concept that this problem was out there and to the degree this was out there in the world. So if we can spark some mobilization initially, even in the gay community, which we can get to, that's a really good place for us to start, I think.
Well, what are the stumbling blocks to that? Because there is a perception that if you help gay youth, you're some sort of chicken hawk or pedophile. How do you get around that?
It's a very tough question on how you overcome those perceptions. People in the gay community are very conscious about that. And it's not a pretty segment of society and definitely not a pretty segment of the gay community. And to a certain degree, there are things we don't want to deal with. But hopefully we will get the message out. I hope people will take an interest in it and realize that they are a valuable resource within the community, these kids. These are not lazy, stupid kids. These are, you know, intelligent kids with dreams and aspirations who are willing to do what it takes to survive and want to be off the street and want to have as normal a life as they can. They just need our help.
We're speaking with Eric Criswell and Martin Perdonier, co-directors and co-producers of the documentary Out in the Cold. We're also speaking with the force behind the film, Judy Shepherd.
Hello, this is Judy Shepherd, the executive director of the Matthew Shepherd Foundation and the mother of Matthew Shepherd. And you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
Run away.
What can one person do? People listening to us right now, what should they do?
One individual wanting to make a difference can change the world. I think it's important for each person to look at their own life and to decide, where can I have an effect? Can I go to my pastor at my church and have a talk with him? Can I respond to him next time he makes an anti-gay comment from the pulpit? Can I go to my school? Am I a teacher? Am I an administrator? Do I have kids in school? Can I go talk to their teachers? Can I go to my community college? Can I go talk to City Hall? There's so many ways that one person can bring up this issue and address it, and everybody has to decide for themselves what they're most comfortable with. But one person sparking up a conversation or just responding in the right opportunity can really cause a lot of change.
Back over to Judy. You've done a lot of talking about education.
I just think people don't realize how powerful they can be once they make the decision to try and help. And they're actually kind of afraid of that power. They think that if they get involved, that it will overtake their lives. We all know in different aspects of our lives, when we volunteer to do things, pretty soon 10% of the people do 90% of the work. So they're afraid. They're afraid of committing and adjusting their lives to this commitment. So really what it boils down to is just making the choice and understanding how important it is to really try and make things work, to be part of the system. You can't sit back and just let it happen around you without trying to make a difference. You need to be part of your community. And the young people of the gay and lesbian community who don't find any support in their local communities, go someplace else like Los Angeles where they think a city must have something that will help them. So the facilities in Los Angeles are just besieged with kids they can't help. So we need to get the message out to the smaller communities that there has to be something to help these kids, and not just kids from the gay and lesbian community. All our kids. All our kids, for some reason, are out there. And it's not that all of them choose to be rebellious or live life on the edge, as they would put it. They're out there for some reason. That we just need to try and figure out why they're running away from home. What are they not getting at home that they're getting on the street? And it's very scary for one person to commit to a stranger that on the outside, when they see that anger, those young people on the outside, the way they dress, that they look so different, they're afraid to move in and face that anger and make that commitment to those kids. It's just a fear you have to overcome.
You mentioned educators, and I'm struck by the military's don't have, don't tell policy often extends to our school system and even families.
Well, it's easier to deal with. It's easy to say, you know, I have no objection against the homosexual community. I just don't want to know about it. So if you're gay, just don't tell me and everything will be fine. Well, how unfair is that? That's just not right. You need to share who you are and be who you are with everybody around you. And I really think that a lot of the issues that are facing the community today, including the youth, is that if the cloak of mystery were removed from the community, if the ignorance were gone, then these issues would be moot. Some of them just would not exist. But what's going to eliminate that is everybody coming out all the time, making it familiar.
Do some kids leave just to avoid coming out? They're not thrown out, but they just know what will happen and leave.
I think that element is out there. Yeah, I'm sure there are a million reasons why the kids leave, but I'm sure avoiding the confrontation is one of the reasons that they leave.
Everyone seems to be wondering, well, what has to happen? And I look at it in sort of a twofold solution. On the one hand, what I would love to see is the gay and lesbian community respond to this much in the way that we so compassionately responded to HIV and AIDS when it first appeared. It came into consciousness, and we were able to create wonderful systems to support people who were affected by HIV and AIDS. With this issue of homeless, gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgendered youth, we hope to increase enough awareness at this point that maybe we can start a movement like that and really get the community mobilized to add to the services that are there and to really address this issue. I mean, I think it is our responsibility to address this as a community.
Anything else you'd like us to know?
So many times, people walking down the street will see these kids on the street corner or asking for money, and they'll either think it or actually say it out loud, go get a job. But it's not that simple. They are actually living on the street. They are sleeping on the street with what they have, what they can carry. And they can't go out and get a job. They have nowhere that they can get a shower every day, clean up every day. They don't have an alarm clock to get up to go to work. They don't have a residence. And it's very difficult to get a job without residence. But unfortunately, they can't get a residence without having a job. It's such a catch-22. And the longer they're out there, the more involved they do get in drugs and prostitution. then you're dealing with many other issues, especially with the youth. A lot of them who are on the street at a young age didn't finish school, so they don't have the education. They don't know what it's like to be responsible. They don't know what it is to pay a bill, simply because they never reached that point in their learning.
Is part of the problem invisibility? Because when I see a guy pushing a shopping cart, I go, oh, homeless guy. If I see a bunch of kids hanging out on the corner, it never occurs to me.
Definitely. And I think that's why a lot of people are surprised at how big the problem is, because they're not that visible. A lot of them do blend in. I mean, they're not pushing the shopping carts around for the most part. They do hang out in groups. They look like any other kid, except that they are homeless.
Mrs. Shepherd, are there other things? What other things? There are always other things. What other things would you like us to know about this film, the Matthew Shepherd Foundation, things you've learned over the last few years?
Well, it's really that the issues that face the community aren't that different than the issues that face America at large. We just need to take the time to recapture these kids, because we're losing so much potential in these young people, and we need to figure out how to address their problems. I just encourage people to get involved in their local communities, organizations, and vote. You know, be part of the system to help it change.
What is the job of a parent?
The job of the parent is to love and support their kids no matter what. That's the job of a parent.
We've been speaking with Eric Criswell, Martin Bedonier, and Judy Shepherd. For more information on this or other projects of the Matthew Shepherd Foundation, point your internet browser to www.matthewshepherd.org. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Pushed around and kicked around, always a lonely boy. You are the one they talk about around town as they put you down. And as hard as they would try, they'd have to make you cry. But you never cry to them, just to your son.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Brian Nunes, Rex Walkner, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Bronski Beat performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's an easy link to the show from our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help in This Way Out's critical struggle to stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 5CST Southwest Adelaide, South Australia, WPSU University Park, Pennsylvania, KUMD Duluth, Minnesota, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.